So there's a question in here about the Bible's position on homosexuality. I will tell you that if you don't have our book, my book, The God-Shaped Heart, just email Francesca, say you asked this question on our question answer time, and you have a U.S. address, we will ship that out to you. I have an entire chapter where I address that question, and I don't think I could do it justice here in a short answer. So I would encourage you to get that where I go through or you can go to our, let's see, to our ministry website under the, there's another place you can get this, because I gave a lecture on this, about 20-minute lecture on this, and you go to our resource section under the God and Your Church seminar, and under the God and Your Church seminar, under the answering difficult Bible questions section, there is a 20 or 25-minute presentation on the question of homosexuality in a Christian church. So I encourage you to go there and just watch that, and you'll get a very, hopefully, a thorough answer for yourself. Is the purpose of Jesus' death to atone for everyone's sin to fulfill the verse about blood, there is no remission of sins? So my understanding of the purpose of Jesus' death is to actually destroy sin, destroy rebellion in the hearts of people, to restore humanity and human beings back to loyalty for all those, to save the species human, and to solidify the angels in heaven in their loyalty. All things in heaven and earth are reconciled to Christ at the cross. The idea that there's no remission of sin without blood, this is exactly correct. Christ could not save us without his sinless life and self-sacrificing death, which reveals the truth, exposes the lies, destroys the carnal infection of fear and selfishness, restores God's perfect law back into the species human, thus fixing and curing the problem of sin in the human species, and he becomes the connecting link to God's sinless world or creation or heaven to sinful humanity, and through him he's the vine, we're the branches, and we receive all that he's achieved into our life through faith. So yes, I have no problem with that. I think it's a wonderful text. And we understand remission doesn't it can sometimes mean like something legal, but in medicine, if you had somebody with cancer, what do you want the cancer to do? To go into remission. And so without the shedding of Christ's blood, sinfulness in the hearts and minds of people would not remit. Our characters would not be remitted back to God's original perfection. And so Christ came to remit sin, or to eradicate it and restore his perfection within. I understand humans were created mortal mortals. We needed to eat of the tree of life that later had to be taken away, Genesis 3:22. Do you think it is an actual life-giving fruit? I find it confusing as a source of life. As a source of life is God. Is it representing the presence of God? Or is there a life-giving tree out there that could be taken hostage by evil forces? This is an interesting question. I wrote a blog on it. You can go to our website and get more detail, but I'll answer it generally here. My view of the tree of life in Eden was simply a tree that provided perfect nutrition for human beings that prevented any type of aging or genetic decay. The tree of life would not stop a decapitation. It would not stop Cain from bashing Abel's head in with a rock. It would not stop an atomic bomb from vaporizing people. In other words, the tree of life would not stop evil, but it would stop, in my view, God designed that tree partaken of would physiologically prevent decay and aging, basically. So you would stay in perfect physiologic health. This is why after sin, they were barred from approaching the tree so that there would not be an immortal sinner. And your question is insightful because this is also why the tree and the Garden of Eden were taken off the planet Earth. Because if there was such a tree on planet Earth, and it's not, it's in heaven, and it will come back with the New Jerusalem. But if it were, who do you think would control it? The meek and lowly of heart who are gracious and loving and wouldn't force people to do their way? Or would the most despicable and the most violent people control this tree? And in so controlling it, what would they do on earth? They would extend wickedness and evil and violence. And so God took the tree off the earth as a mercy to limit the power of those who would use it in a destructive and harmful way. So that's my view of the tree. What are your top five favorite books of all time, excluding the Bible? You know, I never really thought about that before, so I can give you some favorite books, but it could be in reflection. I might come back to, I like this one even better. Okay, so this is not a memory test. It's really kind of right now. What am I thinking? What I'll tell you. One of my favorite all time books is The Desire of Ages. It's one of the best books on the life of Christ. I understand Billy Graham said it was the best book in his library on the life of Christ. So I love the book, The Desire of Ages, and I love the book I quoted out of earlier today, Steps to Christ. They're two of my favorites. I also like the book Servants Are Friends by Graham Maxwell. Very, very good book. So there's three. I'll give you three. Proverbs 24:17 says, "Don't rejoice when your enemies fall. Don't be happy when they stumble, for the Lord will be displeased with you and will turn his anger away from them." Does it mean that when we break the law of loving our enemies, God will stop punishing our enemies? But in Old Testament times, many godly men pray to get their enemies destroyed. Yeah, so I think if design law stuff, what's going on? First off, who is this passage being directed toward? The people who don't believe in God and are rebelling against him, or people who do believe in God and want to follow him? The Proverbs, who the Proverbs directed toward. Don't rejoice when your enemies fall. It's directed to those who believe in God. Okay? Don't rejoice. Now, why? Why would God send a message to those who believe in him? Don't rejoice when your enemies fall. Don't be happy when they stumble, for the Lord will be displeased with you. Why would the Lord be displeased? Well, parents, if you have a child and one of your child struggles with whatever, and they have a bad outcome, and they're suffering and they're struggling, and one of your other children snickers and laughs and rejoices and loves it when your one child struggles in pain, are you happy about that? Would you say, don't rejoice at your brother's struggles and falling? Why would you hate your one child laughing and celebrating the pain and downfall of their sibling? Why would you hate it? And remember now, all of us are God's children. So he's looking at it as the father to his children. Why does he hate it? Now, the one who's struggling and falls has whatever their problems to deal with. But what is happening in the heart and mind of the one who's snickering, laughing, mocking, rejoicing, celebrating? What's happening in them?
Isn't it damaging to them?
Yes. This is the point. And so the person who, let's say somebody's has struggled with an addiction and they've fallen into bad times because of their addiction. Isn't it true that that fall often leads them to hit what's called rock bottom and they actually turn their life around at that point? But what about the person who is, thank you God that I'm not like this sinner. They deserve their suffering. Are they likely to turn around? So who's in the worst eternal position? So God is saying, don't do this. It hardens your heart. It sears your conscience. It makes you callous. It destroys the tender, loving attributes of my kingdom that need to grow within you. So this is why he's saying, why then might God stop punishing? It's interesting. They all don't read that way. If you read this same verse in, for instance, the Message version, it said, don't laugh when your enemies fall. Don't crow over his collapse. God might see and become very provoked and then take pity on his plight. Take pity on them. Okay, why? Who, again, the person being addressed here is the one who is taking pleasure in someone else's suffering. That's the person. The person who's suffering is not being addressed in this. It's the person who's taking pleasure is being addressed. Okay? And they're saying to the person taking pleasure, don't take pleasure, because if you do, God may, what? Intervene and show mercy and relieve the suffering of that person so that you'll stop mocking. He doesn't want to see you damage yourself by gloating over someone else. He's trying to protect you. That's what's happening here. Isn't that awesome?
He hates arrogance in any of its forms, I think.
Are the three angels' messages sequential or simultaneous? Yes. Yes. They are to be given simultaneously, but they're sequential. If you don't understand the good news about God first, you will not understand what it means to come out of Babylon. If you understand the good news about God as that Jesus came to pay your legal penalty so God won't kill you, that is the message of Babylon. You're worshiping Baal. You're still in Babylon. And then you will teach Babylon is actually coming out of a system with a different set of rules than yours. But you're still worshiping the rule enforcer God that these people are worshiping. And you argue back and forth over, Babylon is that system that sprinkles by baptism. Babylon is that system that has a priest who claims to give the Eucharist to you that turns into the actual body of Christ over and over again. That's blasphemy. That's Babylon. No, our system, we know that when you pray, Jesus doesn't present a sacrifice to the Father. Jesus presents his merits, meaning the legal payment he's already made years ago to his Father, so the Father won't kill you. Missing the entire time that both of those systems have a God that need Jesus to do something to him so he won't kill you. They're both Babylon. So it's simultaneous, yet if you don't understand the true gospel, God's design laws, worshiping who made the heavens, the earth, the sea, you won't understand what it means to come out of Babylon. And then you won't understand the third angel's message at all, which is simply a description of what happens when God removes his grace. He has been holding at bay the consequences of rebellion. He's been holding it at bay. And when he stops holding it at bay and let people reap what they sow, then you see what happens described in the third angel's message, which is the ultimate evidence of why living in harmony with God's design is the right way. So somebody just wrote, happy Sabbath, happy birthday. Thank you. Thank you for all your important work you provide us. This is my first live attendance from Branford, Connecticut. I pray daily for your building project. May God guide every step and ideas for this project. That's it for today. We get to adjourn early.